Because again, you want a mix of always qualitative and quantitative feedback when you think about measurement. It can't just be one or the other.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok. My guest today is Jordan Berman. Here's three facts I think you should know about Jordan. One, he believes almost all communications can be measured, so why not pursue this to find out if your intended message landed as you had planned? Two, he has worked for or provided counsel to some of the world's best knowing companies, among others, including Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, and Kraft Foods. Perhaps you've heard of them. And three, he has recently published his first book, a brand new author, always an exciting moment. And the book is on the next level communication skills. And the book is titled, The Trust Trifecta, A Leader's Guide to Hitting the Trust Jackpot. Jordan Berman, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thanks very much for having me, George. Looking forward to the discussion.
Glad to have you here today. And we can go in many different directions with your expertise. But I'm curious to find out more about the concept of actually measuring communications. And you know, some people might say, well, yeah, we do the analytics. But when you talk about measuring communications, what do you mean?
So I do talk about analytics for sure, but I think, you know, my perspective is that while we typically use, or it's traditional to use analytics to demonstrate the impact and value of communications and or the communications function, I like to look at it from another lens, which is as a strategic lever for really understanding, as you said at the outset, whether or not your message was received as you intended. And it's really the insights from the analytics that we use in order to shape and inform our future communications planning and messages.
Jordan, can you give us an example of one of those cases where you measured the message that was received, and actually give us two examples, a case where it was received as intended and a case where it was received not as intended.
Sure. So the one where I would say it was intended is we measure our town halls at our company and quarterly leadership calls, for example, and we always send out a survey after. And typically the survey asks our employees whether or not they understood what was discussed or had a better understanding of a strategy or decision we made, and generally what they thought of the call, etc. And without a doubt, every single time we hear about the transparency of the communication, that they appreciate the openness, the honesty, and the candor of our leaders or presenters. So we know that that is both our intention in the way we frame the messages and also deliver them. And now our employees are saying, you've actually achieved that outcome. On your second point, I think it's, again, I don't have a specific example, but what I can use is on our intranet. So our company intranet, which falls under, you know, my team's purview, we also do a lot of analytics. And what we found there is that the stories that we put on our intranet, there's only a certain kind of story that resonates with our employees. And those are stories that are more human interest related or CSR related, corporate social responsibility. Whereas stories that are more business oriented fit better into our weekly news bulletin that we send out. They don't resonate as well on that channel. So it's as much, again, about using those insights to figure out not just did your message, was it intended and received as such, but really what's the best channel for that message, given that your stakeholders consume information at different channels that best suits them.
Now that's interesting. So the corporate intranet is preferred to be the human voice, the human communication. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think employees generally, first of all, love to hear stories about other employees, their colleagues and peers. And so we do very much human interest stories, not just stories about George who delivered some kind of business outcome, but George in his free time who donates some of his expertise to a local charity, for example. So we try to find human interest stories. And we can include a lot more photos and video that seem, again, to lend themselves much better to an intranet-based channel than a bulletin, which is designed well and is e-based, but still. So I think part of it, again, is the channel and part of it is the content.
Mm. Now, I wonder if that allows people to program their expectations so that when they open the intranet, they know this is where I'm going for human stories. I'm not going to be bombarded with business nonsense.
Yeah, well, we try not to call it nonsense, but in all seriousness, it's a great question. I don't know if they actually do that, if they are programmed that way. But what I would say is that as a team, we sit down every Monday and have an editorial meeting. And we look at all the content that we've been developing that we plan to distribute that week on all the various channels. And to your point, George, we say, this is what's being planned for the intranet. Some of these stories are business related. Do we believe we have to give them that sort of extra bit of profile or visibility, or can we just leave them to the channel we had planned on, which is our weekly bulletin? So I think that there is a bit of programming in terms of there's an expectation that when they go there, they'll see these kinds of stories. But that's the insight we've learned, and we've adjusted our communications planning as a result.
I imagine timing is critical, that the message needs to come in about the same time frame on a periodic, so whether it's weekly or biweekly or daily, but it needs to stick to that schedule. You just can't say, well, we'll send it when we've got some news or when we get to that. We're busy with other stuff. So if you miss the timing, that disrupts
Well, it's an excellent question, and you're spot on, meaning timing is a factor, and I'll talk about it from two perspectives. One, as you say, people do start to get into a routine where they expect something to arrive in their mailbox, or they expect new stories to appear on the intranet or on many of our other channels. We have an internal Yammer channel, for example. We have social media platforms. And so from a timing perspective, we have, I would say, made some changes to timing, and we've noticed it again on the readership and the impact. So typically on Wednesdays, we send out our weekly news bulletin. On short weeks, because of holidays, we'll send it out on a Thursday, and we notice a change in readership. And so we do, to your point, expect timing to play a role. And then again, on social media, we absolutely, and LinkedIn and Twitter will provide these analytics to you for free, but there are certain times that are much better for posting than other times. And so again, we do schedule our posts at the highest readership times. And then finally, I'll just say, I mentioned the editorial meeting. From a timing perspective, what's important for us is that, you know, in the week prior, when we had planned to distribute all these communications, something may have changed in the company where it is no longer appropriate for us to issue a story. So I'll give you an example. About a year ago, we had to make some changes in our manufacturing plant, and we had to restructure it. And some people, unfortunately, their jobs were impacted. It just so happens that on the heels of that announcement, a week later, we had a story planned, which was basically celebrating all of the relationships within our company, many of which are decades long. We're fortunate to have long tenured employees. And so we found three or four employees who each were willing to talk about a friendship that had developed over decades in the workplace. Now you have to ask yourself, is that the right time to talk about celebrating long-term friendships when we've just announced a week earlier that people have lost their jobs? So your point about timing for many different levels is spot on, and it's an important consideration.
You mentioned the use of a survey to measure the results. Do you do a survey after every message, or is that something that you just do periodically to see that we're on course?
No, we do it, I would say, mostly for every town hall and every quarterly leadership meeting. Certainly for the first few years. We don't maybe do it every time now. We'll maybe skip one here or there. But if it's a unique event, for example, we just had a global talent show, we might do a survey to see how it landed with people. Because again, you want a mix of always qualitative and quantitative feedback when you think about measurement. It can't just be one or the other. So for example, I, as one of the members of the executive management committee, and my colleagues, we hold employee roundtables every month. And it's 10 to 20 employees sitting around now virtually. We don't have any prepared remarks. There are no presentations. It's just designed to listen. What's on employees' minds? What is their feedback? What are their ideas? What are their complaints? Do they have any ideas about how we can improve? And so that's much more qualitative. It's also a lot more rich in the insights we're able to gauge. And then we take all those themes and we roll them up. And then we look at them from all 10 of us who are on the committee. And we say, okay, here's where there seems to be a gap where we need to dial up some either information or visibility on a specific topic. Or here's a topic where there's a gap in understanding or some confusion. How should we address that using communications? So again, this gets back to my opening comment about using it strategically. It's not just information for information's sake. We actually actively utilize the analytics from all of our channels all the time. Every month, we have a whole dashboard, whether it's an email that gets sent out. We have software that, again, tells us who, not who individually, but how many people read it, from which country, how long they spent on it, things like that. So it's very, very helpful.
So I'm hearing, as you're saying that you're performing the role of communicating with the staff around the world, which is typically what one might see as the role of corporate communications. But more importantly, you're also having that return conversation. So it actually ends up becoming a two-way communication, because what you get back determines what you might say next time.
Absolutely. That's exactly it, George. And to be honest with you, as you know, as corporate communicators, we're not just stewards, if you will, of the company or organizational narrative, but we also need to understand how is it resonating, that narrative, with our stakeholders. So you're right, the two-way dialogue is what's critical most. And to be honest with you, it's also a lever for employee engagement. Employees want to, like everybody else, want to be heard. They want to be acknowledged. And in fact, when we redesigned our intranet, we moved from what used to be a static intranet where we would just post content. So to your point, one way. And now it's very much set up like Facebook. We have a like feature. We have a comments feature. People can like people's comments. And so here we're getting much more engagement, not just information. This is how many likes we had this month. But we actually have comments from people saying, this is amazing, or have you thought about this? So that two-way dialogue, to your question, is spot on. It's really important.
Jordan, has the level of, during the pandemic, has the level of engagement changed?
It has. It's actually improved, meaning it has strengthened, which may be the same for other companies. We feel very fortunate that it has. We have about 8,000 employees worldwide, and about half of those have to remain on site to perform their roles because we have manufacturing facilities. But about half, so close to 4,000, have immediately, starting in March, been working remotely. And so for us, what went through our minds is how do we make sure we keep everybody engaged when we have, first of all, a split or divided workforce, and half of those people aren't on site? Which is sometimes easier to have engagement, right? Because you can have events and activities. And so we've been fortunate to be creative, like many other organizations, and to adapt. And I'm really fortunate to have a great, creative, smart team who's thought of a lot of great ideas about how to bring much of what we did in person online, but we've also come up with new ideas. And so we have been fortunate to see our engagement actually increase since the pandemic started.
Give us an example of one or two ways you've taken what people used to expect in the in-person world. How have you taken that online?
Yeah, sure. I'll give you two examples. One is we have an annual global awards ceremony each year where we give out about, I think it's 8 awards to employees from across different functions and from across different geographies based on a certain number of criteria. And given that they're just 8 awards, but sometimes they're teams and they're virtual, although most of our employees are in Canada, we used to have a ceremony in person up until this year that was, you know, pretty special. It was catered and people got dressed up and, you know, we actually hand out statues and awards, and it's a big deal. Now, the limiting factor is we don't have space to invite everybody. Obviously, it's in a training room and a meeting room at our offices. It can fit about 200 people. This year, when the pandemic struck, we absolutely felt it was critical to continue with the awards, but we brought them online. And how did that change things? Well, first of all, we could invite as many people as we wanted to. So now we invited all the nominees, not just the winners. And we invited all the nominees' managers as well. And so we had hundreds and hundreds of people join us, was one thing. And then the second thing is we were able to do something we wouldn't have done in person. So we have some people in the company who have musical talent. In fact, we have many, and I'll talk about the Global Talent Show. But we had basically musical interludes live streaming during the award show. And we were able to do that because of technology. So it was very much set up like an award show you see on TV. We had an MC who was yours truly. We had different videos. We had some live entertainment. And of course, we had the awards and still the remarks. So that's one example. And the second is our United Way campaign. So we are strong supporters of the United Way here in Canada. And every year we have a campaign on site with many different activities. And this year it had to be virtual. And so again, the team and the organizing committee was tasked with figuring out how do we engage people again in fundraising in a virtual world. And they came up with a few activities. One was a trivia contest. Another one was a yoga session. We had a number of online activities that we would normally have done in person that were really big successes. So that's a few examples.
Part of me is wondering, since things are going so well virtually, are we ever going to go back to in-person meetings, because they seem kind of mundane compared to what we're doing virtually?
Well, it's a good question. I will tell you that this pandemic for us has forced us or given us the opportunity to revisit our remote working policy. And I would say, in all honesty, George, that before this, we had some variability across the organization around who was allowed to work at home and how often. What we heard from employees was that they would like more, more even or more parity across the organization. And so we did a survey. And in the summertime, we asked employees, given the opportunity to work at home part-time or full-time or coming back full-time, what would be your preference? And in fact, initially, we had a very low number of employees in the low single digits who said they wanted to return to the office full-time. Now, a few months later, we did a subsequent survey just to see if things had changed, and they had somewhat. I think as time wears on, not everybody's fit to work at home. They maybe don't have the space or the privacy, or they want to get away from their spouse or their partner. But we still have a very large number of people who will remain working at home, even post-pandemic, post-vaccine. And we're happy to contribute to their positive employee experience by allowing them to work remotely.
I think I heard a hint of it there, but I'm going to ask the question. We heard about the communication between your department, communications department, and the staff, and that it's a two-way communication. But I'm wondering, does that communication that comes back to you, does that bubble up, or do you have a line to the senior exec? Are they hearing the messages too?
Yes, they are, because again, I sit on the Global Executive Management Committee. So I report to our president, CEO, and there are 10 of us on the executive leadership team. So I have a seat at that table. And again, we take all of the input. So we have somebody on my team who sits in on the employee roundtables, and they take notes. They take themes and comments and questions. They're not attributed. And then that person takes those notes from everybody's roundtables and rolls them up into a summary, and we begin to look at themes, so that gets played back. And of course, I also provide my colleagues on the committee with a snapshot of what employees are saying through other channels, to your point. And so we have an analytics report that we share amongst our team. And then I share a different version, not as detailed, with my colleagues, really to give them what you're saying, the insight and the feedback that we're hearing from employees, so that we can adjust as necessary, both as senior leaders, but also as a communications function.
Jordan, you mentioned earlier about having to deliver some bad news because of a change in manufacturing. Some people were being let go. Did you measure how that message was received?
We measured it, yes, but not, I would say, in a traditional way, meaning we measured it based on the feedback we heard from exit interviews with those employees through our HR business partners. So we offer up and encourage employees who leave the organization, whether voluntarily or involuntarily, to have an exit interview, and we use that information. But I will tell you that in a previous organization where we went through a transformation, the same thing happened. We were preparing to restructure the organization in about a year and a half's time. And we started communicating early about it. We didn't have all the information or all the answers, but we were very transparent about the fact that we needed to make changes, why we needed to make the changes, and that employees could expect that many of them would lose their jobs. And we talked about it not just from a year and a half out, but through over the course, throughout that year and a half. And I would say two things, George, we learned from that, and it confirmed for me that one, people, that is employees, want to be treated like adults, and they can take the truth, even when it's difficult. And that's why I talk about in my book the importance of transparent communication, which is taken for granted. But the other thing is, we had almost, I think it was low single digits of employees choose to leave on their own accord in that year and a half, knowing that they could lose their job. And then finally, what we heard in the exit interviews, to your point about do we hear back, is every single employee who did an exit interview to a T told us that they appreciated having that year and a half advance notice and that transparent communication so that they themselves could then think about what do they want to do next? Do they want to take their career in a different direction? Do they want to retire? Do they want to pursue a hobby as a new profession? And so there's a lot about the way you communicate, to our earlier comments about timing when you share information, and then to your last comment about circling back and finding out how it landed. All of that is really important to have a really integrated, holistic approach.
You mentioned your book, The Trust Trifecta, A Leader's Guide to Hitting the Trust Jackpot. It's, I understand it's available in all the major bookstores. What might a leader or a communication professional gain from that book?
Yeah, I think what communication professionals first will gain is that, you know, like you and I, they serve as trusted advisors to leaders in an organization. And I think what will give them is a different framing or perspective, not on the importance, which they all recognize, but on the type of communication, and more importantly, how to deliver that communication. And I think it's very much not your typical communication skills book. This isn't about body language and eye contact and tone and pitch, although I talk about that briefly at the end. This is about what I call, and you said at the outset, next level communication. This is about a masterclass in communication skills with the sole purpose of really deepening and strengthening connections with others so that you build trust. Because as leaders, and what leaders need to know and be reminded of, is that trust is earned. And my experience, having coached hundreds of leaders over the past few decades, is that often leaders, particularly leaders who become into senior roles, director or executive roles, is that they come into that role thinking two things. One, I'm here and I've arrived, so people should trust me. I've done this for a long time and never had an issue before, and therefore I don't need to change the way I communicate. And I have all the expertise and the credentials that speak for themselves. So it's sort of obvious the case is there. But what we know is that's not the case at all. And I have many, many examples, many of which I share in the book, where I've seen the most senior, smart, articulated, and accomplished leaders fail in their roles because they were unable to cultivate that trust.
Trust seems to be the most important coin of communication.
Absolutely. It absolutely is. It's You know, it gets to credibility again. And, you know, we have so much information coming at us. And even this year, I mean, trust has become, there are many studies, trust has really become the currency of the day. Not that it always hasn't been important, but it's starting to probably get the kind of attention it's always deserved. And certainly, to your point, when you think about it from a communication standpoint, again, it's not the body language and eye contact that's going to generate that trust. It might generate a momentary point of connection. But the thing is, as leaders, what you need is people to trust you because you need them to follow you. You're often asking a lot from other people. Sometimes you're asking them to buy into a very different plan or decision or strategy. You're asking them to move across the world and take on a secondment role for a few years because it's good for their career. You're asking them to work long hours or join a team where they don't have expertise. We ask a lot from people. And the reason people will sign up for that is because they trust you. They know that you have their back. They know that you understand them because they have a connection with you. And that's the thing, that's the holy grail we should all be reaching for.
Jordan, an appropriate message, I think, for us to wrap up on. My guest today is Jordan Berman. He's a specialist in communication. He's coached executives, hundreds of executives from major corporations. He's the author of the book, The Trust Trifecta. And today he's helping us create our global talent show.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.